Of the many mitzvos and minhagim that are connected with the holiday of Purim, it is the reading of Megillas Esther which most closely epitomizes the message of the holiday of Purim. Yet, I would like to show that the Megillah speaks to much more than merely this one holiday, but is rather almost a fountain of concepts that are central to Jewish belief and the Jewish Weltanschauung. When we hear the word Megillah, we automatically connect it to Megillas Esther. The Masechta, the tractate of the Talmud that deals with the holiday of Purim, is called Megillah. And yet, there are other Megillos. In Masechta Sofrim, we read of the obligation to read these other Megillos at various times. On Sukkot, we read the Megillah of Koheles. On Pesach, we read the Megillah of Shir HaShirim. On Shavuos, we read the Megillah of Rus. And on Tisha B'Av, we read Megillas Eicha, or Kinos, as it is also called. But despite the fact that these other Svarim of Tanakh, these other books that are included in the 24 books of Tanakh, are also called Megillos, the Megillah par excellence, is Megillas Esther. In fact, the name Megillah is connected to Esther in even a stronger way. The Gemara in Bava Basra, beginning on Daf Yud Dalet Amud Beis and continuing to Daf Tesvav Amud Aleph, discusses the composition of the 24 books of Tanakh. What are these 24 books, and who were the authors of these books? And in listing the names of the 24 books and the order of them, and then in going through the names of the authors, it refers to each one of the Megillos without the title Megillah. The Gemara on Daf Yud Dalet Amud Beis begins Sidron Shel Ksuvim, the order of the section of Ksuvim of Tanakh, Rus, V'Sefer Tehillim, V'Iyov, Umishlei, Koheles, Shir HaShirim, Vikinos, Doniel uMegillas Esther, Ezra v'Divrei Hayomim. Each one of the Megillos is referred to only by its name, and only Megillas Esther has the expression Megillah attached to it. Why is this? Why is this Sefer called Megillas Esther and not simply Esther as the other Svarim are? The author of Megillas Esther, says the Gemara on Daf Tesvav, were the Anshei Knesset HaGdola, the men of great assembly, the leaders of the Jewish people, during the period between the two temples and into many years after the building of the second temple. They were the ones who codified, for instance, the davening that we have today. They were the ones that instituted many other halachos. And they were also the ones who wrote a number of Svarim, including Megillas Esther. So that Megillas Esther was not even written by Esther herself, and yet we call it Megillas Esther. Why Esther, and why Megillah? I think that the name Megillas Esther is not mere nomenclature. It's not merely the name that we attach to it. But it's a name that goes to the heart of what the message of Megillas Esther is. The Gemara in Chulin Daf Kuf Lamed Tes Amud Beis tells us, Esther min haTorah minayin. From where do we know, from where is there a hint in the Torah to Esther? And it quotes the Pasuk in Devarim, Kapitol Lamed Aleph, V'anochi hastir astir panay mehem bayomahu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that I will hide my face from them on that day. Obviously, there is a deeper meaning to these words. Chazal were not merely trying to find some sort of obscure hint that had nothing to do with the essence of what Esther is all about. But rather, as the Vilna Gaon tells us, everything that will happen in the world, every event, has some source in the Torah. We don't always know where it is, and we don't always find it, sometimes until many years later. But everything is hinted to in the Torah. And therefore, Chazal understood that there's a hint to Esther in the Torah as well, but not merely to the person, the woman called Esther, but rather to a concept and an idea. And that idea is Va'anochi Hastir Astir Ponai Mehem Bayomahu. The deeper meaning and the essential message of Esther and of Purim is contained in these words. What do the words refer to? HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks of a time when he will hide his face, when in fact he will not be visible. The Jews throughout the days from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu until the time of the destruction of the first temple were constantly surrounded by the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They palpably could see it in every action, national and individual as well. Certainly the time that the Jews spent in the desert, the fact that they had the man, that they were given the well of water, they were surrounded by the Anonei HaKavod, by the clouds of glory, all that every single day was a reminder of the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Coming into Eretz Yisrael, miracle after miracle, in the capture of the land, in taking over the land and in keeping on to the land, keeping hold of the land, all that was an expression of the highest form of the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Chazal tell us in Pirkei Avos of the miracles that occurred in the Beis HaMikdash every single day. A Jew could not move, a Jew could not do anything without realizing that there was a God, that there was HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he was constantly reminded of it. One would assume that given these constant reminders, that the people would have the feeling of obligation to the Torah, and that they would realize that their lives were tied to HaKadosh Baruch Hu through the Torah. But yet, time after time, we find that the Jews strayed away from Torah in one way or another, until finally the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. The very source of the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Jewish people and in Eretz Yisrael was taken away from them. And then came the years of the Hanochi Hastir Astir Ponai Mehem Bayomahu. The presence of God was hidden. It was certainly hidden in times of tragedy and sorrow, but it was even hidden in the time of triumph, in the time of the Jews' ability to have victory over their enemies. And that's what Megillas Esther is all about. The Megillah is the story of what happened. And yet, as is pointed out by many of the commentaries, the name of Hashem does not appear anywhere in the Megillah. We're told that one of the reasons for this is because the Megillah itself became part of the historical record of Persia, and therefore they did not want to put the name of Hashem in it. How then did this document, which was part of the historical record of a nation that did not believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how did that become part of Kisvei HaKodesh? How did it become part of the Holy Tanakh? And I think that this is what the words Megillas Esther refers to. The word Megillah is usually understood as coming from the Shoresh Golol, from the Shoresh, the root word, which means to roll or to wind up. We know from what we can see of a Sefer Torah or of the Megillos that we have today that Sfarim were not written on books as we know them, but rather were written on parchments which were rolled up, and that's what the word Megillah means. I think, however, that there is another meaning to the word Megillah, and perhaps this is what we refer to when we talk about Megillas Esther. The word Megillah can also come from the Shoresh of Golo, to uncover, to explain, to elucidate. And that's what Megillas Esther perhaps really means. Putting this book into Tanakh was an expression that it belonged in Tanakh, that it was part of the Kisvei HaKodesh. It was part of Hashem's revelation to the world of His presence and of His very being. The very act of making it part of the Kisvei HaKodesh was an expression of that idea. And here is what Megillas Esther means. It's the Megillah, it's the uncovering of the Esther, of the Hastoras Panim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a great miracle here. The Jewish people were going to be destroyed. Men, women, and children were going to be all killed on one day by Haman and by his cohorts. It was a decree that was signed and sealed with the ring of the king. There was nothing that could be done. And yet the events of the Megillah, which could be read as part of Persian history, which to the non-believer seemed to be merely one coincidence after another, these are really the hand of Hashem. And that is expressed by Megillas Esther, by the uncovering of this Hastoras Panim. That though HaKadosh Baruch Hu works in His mysterious ways, without our understanding, and without the people involved even knowing what was going on, the eventual result was the result that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted. And that is why we call it Megillas Esther. We live in a time that is also a time of Hastoras Panim. We look at the situation that Jews live in Eretz Yisrael and throughout the world, and we have many questions, many things that we don't understand. And yet, if we take this essential message of Megillas Esther, of the fact that eventually there comes a time where HaKadosh Baruch Hu opens up for us, reveals to us the Hastoras Panim, then we can go forward with hope and with optimism that just as in the days of Purim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu provided for the salvation of the Jewish people, so too He can do it for us at any time. One of the favorite parts of the Megillah, certainly for children, is whenever we mention the name of Haman. They have the opportunity that we don't give them usually to make as much noise as they want. The first time we are introduced to Haman is with the words Achar hadvarim ho'ele, after these things, Gidal HaMelech Achashverosh es Haman ben Hamdasa. King Achashverosh elevated Haman to his position. The Gemara has a very interesting comment on these words Achar hadvarim ho'ele, because whenever that expression is used anywhere in Tanakh, after these things, it has to be connected to some event which took place before. What is the event that we are talking about? After what event, or in connection with what event, was the elevation of Haman to his position relevant? And the Gemara in Megillah, Daf Yud Gimel Amud Beis, says as follows. Omar Rava. Rava said, Achar Sheboro HaKadosh Baruch Hu Refua Lamako. After HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the healing for the wound, then Haman was given his position. Then the wound, so to speak, was put into place. The Omer Reish Lakish said, Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Makeh Es Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not afflict the Jewish people. Ela Im Kein Borei Lohem Refua Tchila. Unless He creates the healing before. Shenemar, as it says, Kirofi li Yisrael v'nigla avon Ephraim. Only after I have healed or provided the healing for Yisrael has the sin of Ephraim been revealed through punishment. First, the healing process is put into place, and then comes the punishment. Aval umos ha'olam enokein. The nations of the world, however, do not have this. Make oson, HaKadosh Baruch Hu first smites them, v'achakach borei lohem refuah, and afterwards He creates for them the healing. Shenemar, as it says, v'nigov Hashem es Mitzrayim nogov v'rofo. Hashem will smite Mitzrayim, smiting them and then providing the healing. What is the meaning of this concept of hikdim refuah l'mako? We know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is HaKol Yochol. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is able to do anything. Why then should it make a difference if the healing is put into place before the Makkah, before the smiting takes place, or afterwards? we use the expression Yeshuas Hashem keheref ayin, that the salvation of Hashem can come in the wink of an eye. And if it can be created and can come in that short, very short span of time, then why is it necessary for it to be put into place before the makkah is given? In order to understand this concept, I'd like to refer to another idea which is, I think, very important. In understanding how a Jew views HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's an expression in Chazal, Hakol Tzrichim Mazal, Afilu Sefer Torah Shebeheichol, that everyone needs some good luck, even a Sefer Torah that is in the Aron Kodesh. And as this is explained, very often in Aron Kodesh we might have 3 or 4 or 5 or 10 Sifrei Torah. And which one is going to be used is sometimes dependent on Mazal. You can have a Sefer Torah in the Aron that has been neglected for many, many years, whereas you can have another Sefer Torah that is equally good, equally new, equally bright, written with all the Hidurim, and yet that Sefer Torah is used more frequently than the others. So that's the idea of Hakol Tzrichim L'Mazal. The same thing perhaps applies or can be applied to the 13 Ikrim, the 13 principles of faith that were expressed by the Rambam. The Rambam, in his introduction to Perek Chelek, tells us that there are 13 principles which a Jew has to believe in. And not believing in one of these principles of faith would put him into the category of an apikores, of a non-believer. Of all these 13, one is very famous, and that is the one that speaks of the coming of Mashiach. It's actually the 12th. Ani ma'amin be'emuna shleima b'vias ha-Mashiach. And it's the most famous not only because the belief in Mashiach is so important to the Jewish people, but I think also it's been made into so many songs, so many tunes have been given for it, so many different types of tunes, that we can certainly say about the animamins that Hakol Tzrichim L'Mazel, somehow that animamin has had a mazel. There is, however, one animamin, at least to my knowledge, only one animamin for which a tune has been given, and that is the first of the animamins. Animamin be'emuna shleima, shehabore yisparach shemo, that the Creator, blessed be His name, hu bore umanhig l'chol habruim. He has created, and He guides, He is the master of all creations. And He alone made, currently makes, and will make everything. The important words here, I think, are borei umanhig. There are two attributes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has, and in the Jewish way of looking at the world and looking at Hashem, they are of extreme importance. Number one, Hashem is the creator of the world. He is the one who put everything into existence. But number two, and equally important, is that He is the manhig, He is the leader, He is the master of the universe. Unlike Lahavdil, the Greek philosophers, some of whom came to believe in a creator or a first cause, their concept was that this creator, as great as He must have been to be able to create the entire universe, could not possibly have anything to do with His puny creations. Nothing in this world can approach in any way the grandeur and the greatness of the Creator. And therefore the Creator created the world and set it off on its own without having anything to do with it. In the language of Chazal, a person who believes in this concept is a person who believes in less din v'less dayun. There is no judge, no justice, I should say, and no judge. Everything that happens in this world is happenstance. Everything is random. There is no reward and there is no punishment for anything that a person does. This theory, as ancient as it is, going back to the Greeks and even before, is also a belief that some people currently have. A number of years ago, there was a bestseller called Why Bad Things Happen to Good People. And part of the thesis of this writer was this very idea, that there is no reason why bad things happen to good people, that everything in this world is random. We, on the other hand, believe in the concept of Hashgacha and Hashgacha Pratis. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Manhig. He is in control of the world. And is in his relationship with the world, and especially with Klal Yisroel, relates to every single action that a person does, and is also related to everything that happens to a person in this world. That is the concept and the idea of Bore Umanhig. Not merely the Bore, not merely the creator, but the Manhig, the ongoing master as well. The Malbim, in his masterful commentary on the Megillah, a commentary that I would recommend to everyone for its depth and its explanation in so many interesting points, points to this pasuk and to the concept that the Gemara enunciates of Makdim Refu Lamaka, to show what HaKadosh Baruch Hu's intent was in terms of the decree that Haman enunciated. Haman had sent out a decree with the acquiescence of Ahasuerus to destroy, utterly destroy the Jewish people. And to some, this was an indication that in fact the Jewish people would be destroyed. After all, Haman was the premier of the greatest empire in the world. He was a person of great power. And it was not very difficult to, in fact, entice so many people to destroy the Jewish people, a people that, to many of them, was an anathema. Chazal tell us, the Gemara in Megillah on Daf Yud Beis, that the students of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai asked him, "Mipnei ma nitzchayvu soneim shel Yisrael sheba'oso hador kaliya?" Why were the Jews, and we use the euphemism of soneim shel Yisrael, but we really mean the Jewish people, why was there a decree that they be destroyed? Omer lehem imru atem. He answered, as many Jews do, with another question. Why don't you tell me? Omru lo, they said to him, mipnei shenenu misudoso shel osa rosha. Because they had benefited and enjoyed the meal that Ahasuerus had made for all the inhabitants of Shushan. We read at the beginning of the Megillah of this fabulous party that he made for 7 days. Im kein, he asked, Shebeshushan yehargu, shebechol olam kulo al yehargu. That explains why the Jews of Shushan should be destroyed, but why the Jews of the rest of the world? Amru lo, so they said to him, Emorato, well, you tell us then. Amru lehem, bibnei sheishtachvu l'tzelem, because they bow down to the idol. And what's referred to here, says Rashi in the Marsha, is the idol that had been made by Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Bavel. Amru lo, v'chimaso ponim yesh bedavar. So they asked him, if so, why in fact weren't they destroyed? Amru lehem, so he said to them, heim lo osu elo lefanim, af HaKadosh Baruch Hu lo osu imoem elo lefanim. They did it not wholeheartedly. They did it in a sense because they had to. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when he brought about the decree and the punishment through Haman, also did it half-heartedly. V'hainu d'chsiv, ki lo ino milibo. And this is what is written, for he does not afflict from his heart. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's allowing Haman to go through with his decree was not something that was from his heart. It was something that was done only outwardly. The purpose of it was to frighten Klal Yisroel and to bring them to a true tshuva. The same idea is expressed later on Daf Yud Dalet in Megillah, where the Gemara says and compares, or I should say contrasts, Omer Rav Abba, Gidolo Hasoras Tabas, Yoser Me Arboim Ushmona Neviim Vesheva Nevios, Shenisnabu Lohen Yisroel. The taking off of the ring by Ahasuerus and handing it over to Haman was greater than the 48 prophets and the 7 prophetesses that have prophesied for Klal Yisroel. Shekulon lo hichzirum lamutov. None of them were able to bring the Jewish people back to doing the proper thing. Ve'ilu hasaras tabas hechziroson lamutov. But the taking off of the ring had that effect. Now, as Mefarshim explained, it doesn't mean that they never did tshuva. Obviously, we read many times during the time of the Shoftim, as well as the time of the kings, that Klal Yisrael did tshuva, but never to the great extent that they did in the events of Purim. This, says the Malbim, is the concept of Hikdim Refuah Lamaka. It depends what the intent of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. With the nations, such as Mitzrayim, when they sin to such a grievous extent that there is no hope for their tshuva, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's intent is to punish them. And if by chance they do tshuva, to stop the punishment. But the punishment is the main purpose of his actions. And therefore, the punishment comes first, and only then is there the creation of a refuah, of a healing for that punishment. With the Jewish people, on the other hand, the purpose, the goal here, was not the punishment of Klal Yisrael, but it was rather to bring them back to tshuva. And if the purpose is bringing them back to tshuva, and the punishment is merely, as Rav Shimon ben Yochai used the expression, lefanim, it's just an outward expression of anger with Klal Yisrael, but in fact, the intent of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is to bring them to tshuva, then the makkah has to be in place. As the Malbim explains, that sometimes you have a person who makes an operation, some sort of operation, all of the materials that are needed to stop the bleeding or to stop the hemorrhaging are in place before the operation takes place. Because the purpose is not the cutting away, but it's the cutting away in order to provide healing. And therefore, all of the instruments of healing have to be there. This is the idea of Hikdim Refuah Lamaka. And we see here the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Borei Umanhig. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the creator of the world, but has a constant relationship to the entire world and certainly to the Jewish people. And that every action that he does with them is for a specific intent. It's for the intent of deepening the relationship of Klal Yisrael to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Megillah also has a great deal to say about the nature of anti-Semitism as it was expressed in that generation and as it has been expressed throughout the generations. The Gemara at the bottom of Daf Yud Gimel Amud Beis and continuing on the top says as follows. Vayomer HaMelech LaHaman, King Ahasuerus said to Haman, HaKesef Nosun Loch, the money, the 10,000 talents of that you were going to give to me, are given back to you. And the people are given over to you to do as you see fit. Omer Rabbi Abba. Rabbi Abba said, how can we define the two people that are the central characters of this pasuk? How can we define the difference between Achashverosh and Haman? Moshol da Achashverosh v'Haman l'maha dover dome. What the parable that we can give to show the difference between Haman and Achashverosh, to what is it comparable? L'shnei b'nei Adam, to two people, l'echod hoye lo tel b'sof sadeyu, one of them had a mound of dirt in his field, l'echod hoye lo charitz b'tof sadeyu, and one of them had a ditch in his field. Baal charitz omer, mi'iten li tel ze b'domim. The owner of the ditch says to himself, how I wish that someone would give me this mound, and I would even pay for it, in order to fill the ditch that I have in my field. Baal Hatel Omar, and the owner of the mound says, Mi'iten li charitz ze bedomim, how I wish that I could get the use of the ditch in exchange even for payment, so that I can remove the mound of dirt from my field and put it in the ditch. In this case, each one needed the other, and each one was hoping that the other would come forth. After some time, the two men encountered one another. And the owner of the ditch said to the owner of the mound, sell me your mound. He was willing to pay money for it. The owner of the mound said to him, take it for free, and I would be very happy. In this case, the same thing applies. Both Ahasuerus and Haman wished to destroy the Jewish people. This is seen from the fact that the king didn't even want the money. He was willing to just simply give Haman the permission to do with the Jewish people as he saw fit. And when Haman offered to pay that money, Ahasuerus said to him, Tol osa b'chinam. Take it without any payment whatsoever, halavai. Just take it off my hands. A mashal and a parable that tells us a great deal about two people, about Ahasuerus and Haman. And yet, the essential ingredient of the parable needs to be explained. Why to one of them is it a ditch, and why to the other is it a tail, is it a mound? We know that Haman was a descendant of Amalek, who himself was a descendant of Esav. And we know that the enmity of Amalek to the Jewish people and to what they represent to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this world is an everlasting one. How is it expressed? How is this hatred throughout the ages, the hatred of Amalek expressed towards the Jewish people? The Beis HaLevi in his commentary on Chumash offers a unique insight. When Yaakov is about to encounter Esav after coming back from the house of Lavan, he prays to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He takes necessary steps in preparation, but also prays to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hatzileni no miyad ochi miyad Esav. Save me, please, from the hands of my brother, from the hands of Esav. The Beis HaLevi explains that throughout the ages, Esav has two ways, two plans, two plots to destroy the Jewish people. One of them is acting as Esav, Hayodayim Yidei Esav, acting with force, with fury, to physically destroy the Jewish people. To literally, as the Megillah tells us, Larog Osam Taf V'Noshim B'Yom Echad, to kill all of them, men, women, and children. That is the Esav plan of attack. That is one method by which Esav hopes to destroy the Jewish people and what they stand for. But there is another mode of attack, and that is Miyad Ochi, acting as a brother, acting perhaps friendly, trying to entice the Jewish people to assimilation, and in that way, ridding the world of the Jewish people and their relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Throughout our history, we have faced these two enemies, beginning with Esav himself. First, Esav tries to destroy Yaakov, bringing 400 men against a force that was obviously very small. It was Yaakov with his wives and very young children and some of the servants that he had. That proved to be unsuccessful. Esav was unable to destroy the Jewish people in that way. So then he tries another way. Vayomer, Nisa v'neilecha v'elcha l'negdecha. Esav says to Yaakov, let us travel and walk together. Let us be brothers once again. The intent of Esav, however, is still the same. It is to destroy the essence of Yaakov. It is to destroy what Yaakov stands for. I remember many years ago, in the midst of the ecumenical movement started by the Catholic Church, Rav Soloveitchik, Zichrono Livracha, gave a public shiur on the topic and spoke in terms of this pasuk, of the grave dangers that could be found in this type of movement. When the real and ultimate intent is to take us away from Torah, then in fact that is the way of Esav. That is one way that Esav tries to destroy the Jewish people. And he was therefore very skeptical about any such attempt on the part of the Catholic Church or any others. Throughout our history, the descendants of Esav, whether biologically the descendants of Esav, or spiritually the descendants of Esav, have continued these two streams as ways of destroying our people. We live as the survivors of an attempt of the Miyad Esav, the destruction by Hitler, Yimach Shemo, his cohorts and his helpers from so many other nations who tried to physically annihilate the Jewish people men, women, and children. And on the other hand, if we go back in history, we find, for instance, during the 19th century, of the attempt in Russia to try to entice the Jewish people to assimilate through education, through enlightenment, through opening up all of the doors of society to them. It was a blatant attempt to try to destroy the Jewish people. And unfortunately, there were many Jews who fell for it, and many people were lost as part of our people. This, says the Lubliner Rav, Rav Meir Shapiro, best known as the not only founder of the yeshiva in Lublin, but also as the creator and initiator of the idea of the Daf Yomi. This is the interpretation of the Gemara that we read, the mashal of the parable of Ahasuerus and Haman, one of them as the person who has the ditch, and the other as the owner of the mound of earth. Haman, the owner of the ditch, uses that as a way of destroying the Jewish people, digging them, destroying them, physically annihilating them. And on the other hand, Ahasuerus is the person who tries to destroy the Jewish people as an example of a mound rather than a ditch, something higher, building up the Jewish people in a certain way, giving them rights, giving them all the privileges of citizenry, and yet ultimately their aim is the same. The aim is to destroy the Jewish people. And finally, these two people get together, and when one of them, the owner of the ditch, asks for the mound, the owner of the mound is only too happy to give him his mound, because his intent is not to elevate the Jewish people, but to destroy them. And if the other one is going to try to attempt it first, he gives him that opportunity. And that is what happened with Ahasuerus and Haman. The Lubliner Rav goes on to explain a very enigmatic phrase in the Pasuk, in Megillus Esther, in light of this. Esther, at the second party, comes before Ahasuerus and is finally going to ask for what she needs. And Ahasuerus tells her, whatever you need will be given to you. And Esther answers that all that she asks, if she's found favor in the eyes of the king, is she asks for her life. Vayomer HaMelech Achashverosh, the king said, Vayomer LeEsther HaMalko, Mi Hu Zeh VeEzeh Hu Ashem Melo'o Libo Lasos Kein. Who is this who has plotted to do what you say, to destroy you and your people? Ahasuerus seems not to remember what he has done, and that is a matter that the Mefarshim comment on. But what the Lubliner Rav directs himself to is the double phrase here, seemingly redundant, mi hu zeh v'yezeh hu, and says that in fact it is not a redundant phrase, but there are two questions here. The king obviously sees that there is a plot. It's not just simply one person, but there is a plot of two people. One of them is the Zeh, and one of them is the Hu. Mi Hu Zeh, who is the Zeh? Ve'ezeh Hu, and who is the Hu? The difference between Zeh and Hu is that the word Hu is the third person, usually speaking of someone who is not present, or at least not overtly present. On the other hand, the word Zeh, as we see over and over and over again in Chazal's interpretation of so many psukim, the word Zeh refers to something that can be pointed to, something immediately in front of us. And so Ahasuerus' question is, Mi hu Zeh? Who is the Zeh? Who is the one who's doing this openly? Ve'ezeh hu? And who is the one that you allude to that is doing it not openly, but it is rather hidden from view? And according to Chazal, the Gemara in Megillah and Daf Tesvav, Esther begins to answer the question. Vatomer Esther, ish tsar v'oyev, Haman hara hazeh. Chazal were puzzled by this introduction of ish tsar v'oyev, of talking about a person that is an enemy. Of course he's an enemy. Esther just got through saying that this man was trying to destroy her and her people. So it would have been sufficient in answer of the king's question on the surface to say Haman haro hazeh. Chazal tell us that when Esther said Ish tsar v'oyev, she was actually beginning to point towards the king. You asked me who was the man hidden behind this decree, who was not openly on it, and I'm going to answer that question. It's you, Ahasuerus. And she begins to point to him. However, a malach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, realizing the danger that she would perhaps put in herself and her people in by this rash attempt to accuse Ahasuerus openly, pushed her hand to face towards Haman. And she realized that this was not a time to speak about the wickedness of Ahasuerus. This was rather an opportune time to be able to foil the plot of Haman and to bring about the proper punishment to him. So she finishes, Haman hara hazeh. Haman is the zeh. Haman is the open person who tries to destroy Klal Yisrael, the Jewish people, in an open way by physically destroying them. The who is something we will have to take care of at another time. I think the lesson of this message of the Lublin Rav is a very important one. We live in a time where the Jewish people are literally being destroyed. Perhaps not, and certainly we hope not, in the way of Haman. Jews are not being killed in that way. But yet there is a silent and perhaps hidden type of destruction of the Jewish people. And that is the type of destruction that the Lublin Rav refers to as the tail, and the Beis Halevi refers to as the Ochi. The society that in which we live is a free society. It's a society in which we can blend and assimilate very easily and very rapidly, and unfortunately our people have done so. Purim is an opportunity for doing tshuva. Purim is an opportunity for awakening ourselves to the relationship that we have with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In fact, Chazal tell us that the Jews, in reaction to the events of Purim, recreated their relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, re-accepted the Torah. Kimu v'kiblu, kimu mashikiblu kfar. There was a re-acceptance and a deeper acceptance of the Torah. And in fact, according to the Gemara, the understanding the Mefarshim have, while at Har Sinai there was a degree of the Jews being forced to accept the Torah, here they accepted it of their own free will. In thanksgiving to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in recognition of the fact that their existence depends on Him, and it was because of Him that they were saved from this terrible decree, they re-accepted the Torah with enthusiasm, with vigor, and with love. Let us hope and pray that our reaction to the holiday of Purim will be the same, and that we will be zoche to have that wonderful relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and to spread it among all of the Jewish people, bringing about not only the foiling of the plot of the Zeh, the foiling of the plot of the person with the Charitz, the foiling of the Esav, but the foiling of the Ochi as well.